Hello and welcome to the final block, the British Judo podcast, where we interview coaches and support staff from the GB World Class Performance Programme. I'm Chris Barry, GB Performance Analyst, and this week we are joined by Denny Roberts, Elite Development Squad Coach. How are you doing, Denny?
I'm good, thank you, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks, mate. Not too bad.
Why don't we talk a little bit about coaching for you? So, as mentioned, you work in the EDS programme, or the Elite Development Squad. Which is generally the junior to senior transition athletes. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I work day-to-day in the EDS program alongside Colin Oates. We look after the semi-centralised and centralised athletes that are part of the EDS program. And we also look after the senior athletes that are transitioning into the senior program. So the under 23 guys, really.
Yeah. And how long's that EDS program been in place?
It's in the second year now. It's had a good year last year, Europeans and stuff like that. This is its second year, but obviously with the current situation, it's been put on hold.
Yeah. So obviously, as we're recording this, we're in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, so everybody's in isolation. So this chat has been done over the internet. So thanks for joining anyway, Dan. The topic of today's discussion is going to be competition day coaching, and specifically from your standpoint.
My experiences of what I've gone through on a competition day.
Okay, so as a general summary, what would you say your coaching day looks like in competition?
For me, it's we make a big focus on the EDS program is it's all about the team functioning as one and keeping that sort of real team feel throughout the day. I mean, there's nothing better than knowing you have the power of the pack behind you. Essentially, each person has their role in the competition environment, and as you can see on the slide, I've mentioned the sort of key areas that can most affect the competition experience.
So you mentioned that team dynamic and the roles that people play within that. What sort of roles would you describe in that?
Obviously, you have your team leaders and your coaches. The athletes, obviously, they're the most important part. And it's that team sort of functioning together and being one, reading off the same sort of hymn sheet as we go through the day and through the sort of few days that we're there on our competitions and stuff like that.
So just ensuring that everybody's as well prepared as they can be then, yeah?
Yeah.
So what does the first part that you'll probably be part of a competition would be the draw. What does that look like?
Yeah, so through the years I've noticed that, like, some of the athletes that thrive in this area and some that shy away, the ones that seem to embrace the challenge always seem to be in a better place when it comes to fighting a day. Like, not so much the ones that worry about who's in the draw or whether they was fortunate enough to get a bye or not. My advice to the guys that would be coming into and having that competition experience is to focus on yourself and the performance that you want to deliver. Stay in the present. I think a lot of athletes, they seem to drift into the future, and the future is where I'm guessing some might sort of stay in the past and sort of be distracted by what they're remembering or what they've experienced so far. So my advice would be to find whatever helps you stay in the moment and embrace what challenges coming ahead. Try not to run away with yourself, you know.
So sort of a control the controllables type of attitude.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a typical line, but it does fit perfectly in the sense that, yeah, I don't want to be. I want to stay in the present. I want to stay in the now. What can I do now that's gonna sort of narrow my focus into the day ahead, you know?
It makes perfect sense, and what it does, I think, is it simplifies what can otherwise be thought of as a really intimidating or complicated arrangement, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to change it. The draw's going to happen, and you're not going to change what happens in the draw. So there's no real point to me losing my mind, losing my thought process over something that I have no control over. and whether I get drawn against who is perceived the number one in the weight or a hard challenge, then I think that you need to find a way of refocusing that, reframing that, and seeing it as a good challenge and embrace that.
And I suppose it's all it does is it lets you know exactly how you're going to apply your judo anyway.
Yeah, which I think is 90% of the time is what you should be worried about, is letting them deal with you rather than you spending a whole day sort of fretting of what might be or what could happen, you know?
Okay, so you've got through the draw, you know who everybody's going to be fighting in the first round fight. The next thing to approach is the weigh-in. So what's the general sort of approach to, first of all, I suppose, managing your weight in the build-up to a competition and then the actual weigh-in process on the day?
Yeah, I mean, too many times I've seen the faces, the gaunt faces of junior athletes that have punished themselves to make weight and been so encapsulated in the process of doing so that they leave very little time to embrace the focus on the competition at hand. I mean, it's different for the senior athletes. They're established in that weight, but it's part and parcel for them to make weight. But when I speak, I'm speaking and aiming it towards junior athletes that hold on to a weight where they seem to coin the phrase that this is my weight. But from the experience that I've had over the years, that I think if you're good, you're good, and you'll be good in the next weight, and you should focus on becoming a better judoka and an all-round better athlete. And most of all, enjoy the experience, because it still has to be fun. You still have to fall in love with it and have to love the sport. And I think that cutting weight from a young age is not going to support that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're cutting weight extremely hard in the build up to competitions, particularly as a developing athlete like the junior athletes are, you're almost fighting the scales rather than fighting your opponent.
Yeah, and even the build-up to the competition, I don't think they need that distraction that at this point in this age and stage of their development. I don't think weight-making should be a distraction right now. It's all about them getting as best as they can be and performing on the day. And I think that takes away from it, because you're in the training environment, all you're thinking about is what your next meal is or what calories you've got to lose. And it's not the best place to be in right now. And you need to think, rather than thinking in the now, is to think, okay, I've got, 10, 15 years of a career ahead of me. Do I really want to be doing this for that amount of time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned that people sort of establish at that stage sometimes they think this is my weight, when really maybe the focus should be on my judo rather than my weight.
Yeah, I think so. I think what we select as a EDS program, not based on what weight category you're in, we're based on your projection of talent, I guess. But it's not based on your weight. So if we think you're good, we think you're going to be good in any weight. So
yeah,
should be so the focus. Just get better at judo and let's enjoy learning.
Yeah, so certainly with the developing athletes' weight, we don't want to be the focus. We'd rather be working on the technical, the psychological, and the physical development.
Yeah, and I think the weight making is not in line with that.
Okay, so we've gone through the draw and the weigh-in. We're now approaching competition day. The other point on this is about athletes. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I put the athletes on the slide. I mean, at the top, and then the most important part is making sure these guys are safe, happy, ready to perform on a day. So about keeping the calm and letting them find themselves, especially at a younger age. I've had so many weird and wonderful times on the competition day, and this is such a vast amount of different characters that roll through our system that the experience I get with them is amazing. I've kind of categorized them into sort of four examples, and yeah, of course there are others, but these are the ones I experience more. I put them in boxes. So I've got the chatter box. So these are the ones that want to talk about everything and anything. And as a coach, I feel you sometimes can be forced by like a preconceived idea that they need to focus and remain focused. But I would question when and what point that comes into play. For me, it's really about making the athlete feel comfortable and to help them sort of embrace, you should really embrace that distraction that they might need at that point, you know?
Yeah, so there's going to be a bit of a fluctuation emotionally, I suppose, throughout the day, and it's about sort of managing that. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of athletes, they feel like they need to, especially in as you're going through sort of the judo you control and into the sort of walkout bit, there's a point where they need to, I suppose it's their height of nerves at that point, and they need to find some distraction for that. They can't stay focused for that whole amount of time, you know. So you get the ones that want to chat and talk about absolutely anything, and yeah, and it's about embracing that and embracing the differences. I mean, the next one for me is the music box. So these are the ones that want to listen and watch videos or music, and that's their prior to the fight. Now again, that's the way they feel, and that's what they need to do. So again, embrace it. You can obviously prompt when needed to reinforce the fight plan or whatever information they value, but it's about, okay, letting them have that distraction and letting them sort of deal with it emotionally in a way that they feel comfortable, you know?
Yeah. So it's a very individual thing by the sound of it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the next one is the call box. It's the most relaxed person you'll ever meet on the day. I've often had characters that that will predict what they're going to do in the fight and tell me they're going to win with this in this amount of time. And I suppose I'm kind of a little bit envy of this person. I mean, they're on the surface, they seem so complete, and on the day they're embracing everything. But you can tell as the day goes on, they get a bit nervous, and you can, once you understand the athlete and go on that journey, I think you start to read when they're most nervous. But yeah, the cool box guys, they're good to watch on the day and to see them sort of perform, you know. My other one is that in the last one I have is called the Jack in the Box. I think these guys, they're the most keen full kit early on. Do you know what I mean? They're ready to go straight away. There's nothing older than my back. I think they switch between the music box, the chatter box, and sort of different moments throughout the day. And it's, I think for them, it's more of a journey of them sort of finding themselves. They want to know whether it's okay to chat at this point and okay to have music on. And and I think it's a point of it's not wrong. It's just the way that they're learning. They're on a journey as well, you know, and it's about just sort of reassuring them and trying to normalize the nerves as early as possible.
Yeah.
And let them know that being nervous is part of the game. Probably been nervous in a previous competition, and okay, you was nervous then, you're nervous now. It's the same thing. It's the norm. Do you know what I mean? And I think as soon as you can make that happen, the better they'll find themselves of what they want to be like and manage themselves on a competition.
Yeah. I've certainly heard from plenty of coaches over the years speaking to an athlete that when an athlete says they're feeling a bit nervous, the coach would often say, I'd be worried if you weren't, because nerves are a natural part of the process of preparing for the
position. I think you're just, from when you first ever start judo, your first competition will be the same as walking out as a major championship. That nerve never goes. And if it's normality, it's okay. If it's something different, and then you can address that, and we have like preparation funnels that sort of narrow into your thoughts of how you think and how you're feeling on that day for the athletes, and it's a way of just recording that. But yeah, to normalize the nerves is really great to get embedded early on. I think as early on as you can. Anyway.
Yeah, it's the psychological element of sport is well spoken about these days, and psychology is embedded in just about every world-class program there is now. So developing that control of these kind of things early on, as you say, sounds like a very important thing to be doing.
I do have a tip that I use like on a day-to-day competition, day-to-day sort of to engage the athlete. So whether they're any one of these previous boxes that I've mentioned, it's just a way of sort of getting them back in the present. I always try and carry the athlete's water bottle if I can, and I offer it to them when I want to engage them. So at certain points through judogi control, through the walking out and all that stuff, I'll have that bottle there, and then I'll go, okay, do you want a drink? When they're taking a drink, I'm asking them, okay, what's the focus? What's the fight plan? Are they okay? And then they go back to their distraction. But I know that there's moments within that that I'm bringing them back into what the focus is, back into the. And that's just a tip that you can take that away and use that for yourself. So you can apply it to your own athletes. But that's a tip that I use when I'm coming through the draw, through the competition day.
Yeah, so welcoming that distraction, but also ensuring that there is enough focus on the job at hand, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And I use the bottle to sort of break the ice and engage them, take them away from that distraction. Okay, they might have headphones in and have to take their headphones in, take a drink, and then that's when we talk, okay, what's the flight plan? What's the focus here? And then, okay, you feeling okay? You good? You ready? Okay, headphones back on, and then they're back. But I know that they get a hit of the present instead of them wandering off and into the distance, stuff like that.
Yeah, and you get an idea of what's actually going through their head at the time.
Yeah, I really want to keep them focused on the first fight.
Yeah.
And then they know that I'm present. They know that I'm there. We're doing this. We're walking out together, you know.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit of a, sort of a, an old cliche, but one fight at a time is certainly the way to think about it.
Yeah, a lot of cliches are cliches for a reason, I think, and I think that's a perfect example. I mean, like I said earlier, it's about staying in the present. It's about staying in the now. And if you start drifting off to you being on the middle rostrum, I think you're starting to put a hell of a lot of pressure on yourself during that day, rather than just focusing about, okay, I need to get first hand on. I need to do these things right. Focus on your performance, and then you should come out on top.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked about the draw, the weigh-in, and the athletes now, and how each of them has their own little kind of quirky characteristics in terms of how they like to behave or prepare on competition day. Let's talk a little bit now about you and your sort of feelings. So what is it like for you as a coach on competition day? How do you feel on the day? What sort of things are going through your head? What little habits have you got throughout the day? Just tell us a little bit about that.
So it's so strange being asked how I feel, do you know what I mean? And it's never really a thing. But yeah, I'm nervous. It's the same as they're nervous. I'm nervous. And the draw, I'm sitting in a draw hoping they get the best draw, the best day that they could have. And I'm packing my bag the night before that I've got to take with me. I'm organized. I've got snacks in there, the protein snacks, and just to keep me going throughout the day. All the fight numbers, they're all prepared, and what kit they're in. So the day's planned for me. I'm making sure the staff's okay, that the support staff that we have on these events, that the whole team's sort of functioning. And yeah, I'm going through emotions the same as these guys. I'm nervous. I want the best for them. I know all the hard work that's gone into them being there for this day. So I'm like, okay, this, I hope this happens, you know, for every single athlete there. Some days I'm 6-7 athletes a day, and I've got to sort of change and be different people for different athletes and give them that sort of reassurance and comfort to know that I'm there all the time. It's draining. I mean, like, by the end of the day, I'm like, I'm done, you know what I mean? I'm drained. I need sleep, I need food, I need bed, and it's a tough day. But yeah, I love every single bit of it. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, that emotional roller coaster that you follow as a coach throughout the day, it's almost as if you fight every contest with the athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you win with them and you lose the same, and it's your sort of heartbroken day when they come off. I mean, you've been with them on this journey. That's the role of a coach, ain't it? It's a long distance journey, and so you're going through the same emotions, the same disappointment, the same frustrations as they do, and it's hard. It's hard and it's draining, isn't it? But I think when you see them perform and when you see them do these things, it's rewarding. It's the most rewarding job in the world, I think.
You speak about winning and losing with the athlete. what's your sort of approach to each situation when the athlete comes off the mat? I mean, obviously there's a individual sort of element to when it comes to the specific athlete themselves as a person, but what's your sort of general approach to coming off the athlete's won or coming off and the athlete's lost?
I'll try and keep it the same if I'm honest. Like, so if it's a win, I'll high five, shake their hand, well done, good effort. And the same if they lose. I don't think as soon as you come off the mat from a loss, it's, you know why you've lost. You know why you've done these things. Like, you know what's happened in the fight. I think the last person you need is me shouting at you and pulling you apart at that moment. No one needs that when they come off the mat. And I don't think I'm in the right emotional state to deliver that either. So I keep it the same. Win or loss, okay, well done, good effort. We can chat in a bit. And that's, so they get no different treatment for if they win a fight or lose a fight.
Yeah, so when you win, generally speaking, you know you've got another fight to come unless you've won in the bronze medal fight or in the final.
Yeah.
When you've lost, more often than not, you don't have another fight. But on occasion, if you lose in a quarter or a semi-final, you know there's another fight to come. So how does your approach differ slightly in that regard?
You obviously, you greet them the same as they come off, and you do that walk, that sort of long walk back. And I think there needs to be a moment where, or a time period when you need to let them get it out of their system. They've just lost. There's all these emotions going around. There's all this disappointment in there. And they need to get past that. So there's a few sort of tactics. You can leave them alone. Some athletes will go away and sort themselves out. Some of them need to go away, have a little wash their face and come back in. Some of them are just straight back in the environment. I've been with athletes that I've given a timer to them. So, okay, you've got 10 minutes. You can moan, cry, whatever you need to do in this period. But when that 10 minutes is up, you are back and you are back in, and you're going to finish this day off, and we're going to have a good rest for the day, good performances. But I think you need to let that steam off and come back into the environment.
Yeah, and so either way, win or lose, the last fight is done. Process it, get out of the way, and get the focus onto the next one.
Yeah, because you need to get yourself back in. I mean, you don't want to lose and then lose again. That's an even worse day, isn't it? So you want to, like, you're living in the past at that point. Once you've lost, you're living in the past, and you're going, oh, I should have done this. Yeah, okay, that's great. But you're not going to, the learning's not done right there. It's done later. So you still got the whole day ahead of you. So, okay, that's great. We understand that. But now let's go into the next fight, and how are we going to be in this one? And what's our focus now? Do you know what I mean? But yeah, they need to go through a process of getting that out of their system and then back into the present as soon as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's still a job to do in there, and
yeah, you can't change the past. It's happened now, and that's it. So we can change the future, but only if we focus on the present and do the things we have to do to get the performance we need.
Yeah, absolutely. So the days certainly in EJU and IJF level events are structured fairly similarly throughout. You know, you've got an interval of maybe 1 to 2 hours in between the prelims and the final block. What do you as a coach do during that interval, generally speaking?
I go and get coffee, some food. I'll chat with colleagues and stuff like that, and some parts I'm sort of meeting with the other athletes that may have gone out earlier in the day. We're catching up and we're talking about what happened. I mean, they seem in a better place now to engage in that conversation. Hopefully I'm off putting my suit on, because I mean, that's what every coach wants to do. They want to sit in a chair. They want to see their athletes perform in the middle. So, and I think the suit is a massive sort of symbol of that could happen now. So yeah, getting in the suit, I think that's a change. Getting in the suit is a change of mindset, isn't it? Now it's business time. Now it's we're in. So I'm drained at that point. Like I'm starting to get that sort of depletion of energy and stuff. So yeah, I need to refuel, and that's the stuff. I've probably at that point gone all day with no food and no no drink at that point.
Yeah. So you're managing your own sort of energy and emotional levels as much as you're managing the athletes that you're there to help out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's like I said, it's a journey, and it's a journey for both you and the athlete. And you, like I said, you win and you lose with them, so that's all sort of emotional highs and emotional lows. So yeah, it's going to take a toll eventually for the end of the day. And then, like I said, you could have 6-7 athletes on that day. They're not all going to win, unfortunately. So you have to deal with the lows and the highs during that whole day, and it's emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, and that's, like, as you say, it's pretty draining by the end of the day, and then normally you've got another couple of days to do it for, so you've got to manage yourself as much as anybody else, don't you?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's why we do it. We're loving it.
Yeah. Wouldn't want it any other way.
No.
So if you were to sort of sum up your general approach into how you go about your day as a coach, what would that look like?
Yeah, if we go to the next slide, I've put in sort of mainly around the day and when you're in the chair, really, is the first one. I put these three key points, really, is to keep it simple. Like, if you're going to sit there with your athlete and come up with a fight plan for the day, you need to make sure they can actually perform what you've done, what you've asked of them. It's no good saying, okay, I want a spinning Harai here with this throw and that throw, and they've never done that before, or this Griffin pad. So yeah, it has to be relatable to the athlete themselves. And the second one is around sort of clear messaging. I mean, the language has to be known to the athlete. It's no, I can't make up a new concept sitting in a chair of, okay, keep the distance. If they've never heard that language before, then it's not going to be relatable to them. It's not going to be relevant to the athlete. So, yeah, keep the language really clear. And I put on here, be careful of the don'ts. And you hear it so many times, and I've definitely done it in the chair before, it's an easy example, is don't run on. And what you're creating there is something called ironic error. And it's like, now anyone who's listening, I can say, don't think of a pink elephant. And I guarantee everyone's now thinking of a pink elephant. And that's what you create, that okay, don't run on. And that's all the athlete's thinking about, and they end up running on. And so, yeah, so just be careful on what you're saying. Try and change it into a positive positive message, a positive reinforcement.
I suppose, and then you're thinking of what not to do rather than what you actually need to do.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So make it in a message of reinforcement of what your game plan was, or what the focus was of that, rather than the don't do's.
Something actionable rather than something sort of avoidable.
Yeah, of course. And then, yeah, just think about the actual time between Mate and a Jimmy again, and how much information that you're actually going to get across to you. To your athlete at that point, they're starting to fatigue, they're under their own pressure, and if you start rolling out a load of information, then it's just not going to sink in. So I try to keep it to three key points or less, make them very short points, and and then we see what embeds until the next round, or to the next round of Mate and Jimmy. But overload that athlete of too much information.
Yeah, and ultimately the athlete during exchanges will be making their own decisions anyway. So if you're overloading them with information in between exchanges, then it probably complicates those decisions more than anything, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the work's done, ain't it? Like, if you're at that point and you're trying to embed something new, I think that your only luck is that they perform it, but it's not learned by then. I mean, you can change a fight, you can influence a fight massively, I think, in the chair, but it's keeping them points really specific and really sort of direct and clear, that the athlete will, you've got a better chance of getting that from the athlete.
I suppose it probably has a bit of a calming influence on them as well, if they're maybe struggling and not really sure of what to do next. You can have that sort of calming influence to let them know actually they're doing okay. And
yeah, I mean, some exchanges, it could just be just be a thumbs up. It's more information, and yeah, it's just, it's obviously you reading that within the chair, but the way I put it down is that I personally just focus on three key clear points during that day.
It's certainly something that I've seen be effective in the past. It's just three does seem to be that magic number, nothing above that.
It's too much information that you're not going to take in anyway. Yeah. And you might get lost on a point that was not relevant in that, in what your coach has said. So yeah, just keep it simple yeah. And keep it clear.
So we've kind of talked about your general sort of thoughts and approach and feelings. Is there a specific day that you'd like to describe that would actually really sum up the role of coaching?
Yeah, I think we're going to Uno Europeans, and we go 81 kilo men and Lachlan Moorhead. I think it was a good day. I think it's a day that had everything that you can expect in a day, wins, losses, and the experiences you'll get as a coach.
Okay. So what we'll probably do then is we'll watch through a couple of those fights, and you can talk us through what was going through your head and all the rest of it, and how your interactions with Lachlan were throughout the day. We'll just get a bit of an insight into how it actually was in a specific day for you.
Yeah, sounds perfect. Look forward to it.
Okay, then. So round one was against the French lad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about the approach to that fight?
So Lachlan's fought this guy before earlier in the year. Took a loss on that one. It wasn't a great fight in terms of sort of structure and performance, but yeah, the guy's a good guy, solid in a way, strong fighter, really aggressive from the start, and we drew him first round at the European Championship, so we had to, first of all, Lachlan's very good in the terms of how he manages his day. I mean, he's very focused and very he's very aware, like he's in the day, and it was that morning. I mean, when we was in the tunnel going out to the fight, I could see he was he was in a different place than I've seen him before. I've seen him win before and stuff like that, but he was in a different place now. Like, I think he wanted it more than when I've seen him before, and I had it made me more confident in his ability to go and to implement the game plan that we had. I mean, he just looked like he was never losing that day, if I'm honest, at that point.
Yeah.
So the game plan put together was that we needed to get first hand on. We needed to hit him hard from the start, hit the lad hard from the start to let him know that Lachlan was a strong guy as well, and wanted to get two hands on. Because if you watch the guy in the fight, he has a very unique gripping pattern where he comes deep over one side, and we needed to control the shoulders on that. So it was a bat game. First hand on, second hand on, as quick as we can.
Okay.
And then just see what come out of that. I mean, we didn't go into details of what the game plan would be after that, but it was bosh, hands on. Let's go from there and let's work from there. And I think if you press play, we can see the first sort of two exchanges where he does make that happen. He does.
Okay, so working out, you said he seemed different today.
Yeah, he was focused. I mean, he listens and watches Mike Tyson videos, and it gets him in the zone and gets him in the place he needs to be. And if you look here, he's got two hands on. He's controlling that distance. He puts a great attack in there, and the guy's agility gets him off.
Distance again. Exactly there, but then waves it off immediately. Then he goes for it again.
Yeah, two big attacks. I mean, that's the first two exchanges. I mean, I'm in the chair now. I'm thinking, this is it. This is great. I mean, this guy's a strong fighter, and we've upset him like this from the start.
So the plan at the moment is looking like it's working.
Yeah, two hands on. I mean, if you watch, he's got good variation of technique. If he hasn't got the one arm off, he comes Tominagi with his two hands on, and it's a nice nice strong attack. He wants to come deep and get on that belt and create big pressure.
Yeah,
like Daiki's doing now, and it's so scary when if you're watching the previous fights of Lachlan fighting him, he comes from way back and he delivers it high like he's trying to now.
And
that's why we spoke about having two hands on to control that.
Mm-hmm. Managing that space, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So Shido there for Pacific for Lachlan.
I think it's just the game plan stays the same. I'm just reinforcing that. I mean, one Shido on the border, I'm not thinking he's not out of the fight right now. He's still controlling the big, big threat of where this guy likes to score from. So it's about keeping that for now. See, there again, I mean, like he's getting these hands on and now putting the guy in a place where he has to do stuff to try and score. He wants to throw big.
Yeah.
But he's not set it up right and he's not in the perfect position for it. So he's making mistakes. I mean, that could have been a score that had gone either way there.
Yeah. Frustration for the French.
Yeah. Watch, he does it again in a bit. Nice Tominagi attempt there. Again, this is what I'm saying. When he's two hands on, he's Tomo. When he's one hand off, he's big and over the back.
Yeah.
And look, I'm just reinforcing that game plan. Two hands on, keep the two hands on. And control the distance.
You can actually see the Frenchman actually breathing quite hard now.
Yeah, because Lachlan's delivering that power, like that strength the whole time. And it's really hard for this guy's trying to go big. Look, here you go. Big over the top. And that's draining. I think he's a Georgian background and he fights that way. He wants to put people away. And he's fighting hard the whole time.
And Lachlan doesn't actually look in too much trouble there.
No, you can match him for strength. I don't know if you've seen Lachlan. He's a strong guy, and I think it's about to get the performance you need. I think you need to use the attributes that you have, and he's a very strong guy, and that's why we say first hand on, and sort of let him know you're there. We describe it as shit him up. So that first hand on comes on hard, and if you look, we're two Shidos. He's got two Shidos on the board, the French lad.
Yeah,
we're sitting on one, and all we've really done is two attacks, but we're controlling that space. Nothing stupid now. Nothing dangerous. Just staying in the fight.
That certainly helps. We can bench press as much as him to keep people at distance.
Yeah, and if you see, look, he wants to go deep. It's a very threatening grip. It's a very threatening grip from the other guy's point of view. If you're underneath that, it's very threatening.
Yeah. But Lachlan's keeping his composure, managing
that. Yeah, managing that distance. And taking the guy to the back end of the fight. Like he's don't forget, he's beat Lachlan in the first two exchanges before. And okay, he wants to do that again. And now he's at a point where he's thinking, why is this not happening? And he's not preparing nothing. Yeah, he's rushing attacks. He wants to put Lachlan away. And this was the game plan, really, was to stay in the fight. Stay in the fight as long as we can. And we knew we could catch him in the back end.
The amount of attacks the Frenchman's having to put in to try and win this fight is short on him physically now.
Yeah. We're trying to stay on him two sleeves the whole time. Look. Yeah, trying to stay on him two lapels, control that distance and manage the contest.
What's your instruction at this point?
Keep on with the gripping. I mean, if you let go of this, like the big arm will come over the top, like now.
Yeah.
And that's not the place where you really want to be. I mean, if you see the score in a bit, 50-50 for me, but that was a great way of getting out of that exchange. But yeah, it's 50-50 for me in terms of, okay, I'd like to be a bit more dominant there, but it's built up to a place where he's pressured this guy into doing an attack that probably didn't need to at that point. See, big grip over the back, look. It's dangerous, it's threatening, has to manage that distance. And again, I'll be reinforcing, two hands on, it's manage that distance.
Yeah, dangerous attack, that one. Still very much unprepared.
Yeah. And again, so that's the scorer. So that's what I'm talking about. If he's come over the back, he's not prepared, he's gone straight back on himself. Lachlan's hooked in and then got the score. I know there was some controversy online about whether whose score it was and that, but if you get a chance to play it back, you'll see that Lachlan hooks in clearly and the guy lands first on his back and can't throw anyone from your back.
If we just watch this in slower motion, we'll get a better idea of seeing the actual score itself. So, do you want to talk through this exchange, Dan?
Yeah, so he comes off Lachlan and lets him come deep, which is not what we wanted really as a game plan. But I mean, Lachlan's been in that situation before, knows what he's doing, is quite aware where he's there, and he's hooked in. See him hook in. And the guys then fell flat to his back. He's not prepared the attack as well as you should do from the grip that he's got. And he's just flung himself onto his back. And Lachlan's capitalised on it. And it's not the perfect way of doing it. But, hey, we've earned that. I mean, look, we wanted to stay into the back end of the fight. We've got 10 seconds left. The guy's making mistakes. He was about putting pressure on.
Yeah. That was the plan from the start. Was to shut
his main threat down, get two hands on, and just sort of take him to the back end of the fight. Well, if you look at him, he's blowing. He's got nothing left.
Yeah, he's been having to give it absolutely everything. He's now Wazari down 10 seconds to go.
Yeah, at this point, I'll be telling Lachlan to go forward and meet that exchange. You don't want to let the partner gather the momentum enough to come with that big arm over the top. And that's hard, that's tough to deal with. I mean, if you go forward and meet the partner in the middle, you stop that momentum. And that's what I would have been encouraging him at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, first round done. We won the fight, tough fight. Great start to the day.
How are we feeling moving on to the next contest at this point?
Confident now. I mean, he's a tough, tough guy, that French boy. So, feeling confident. And like I said earlier on, there was something different about Lachlan that day. The way he was, the way he sort of come across was different. And he was ready for the fight. You know what I mean? He was ready to blast people away like he did.
So we'll skip past the next contest into the quarterfinal. He came up against a pretty tough Georgian.
Tough Georgian. I mean, did he win Dusseldorf the other day?
He won Dusseldorf Grand Slam this year, and he managed to beat an Olympic champion and two world champions on the same day. So, not a bad day's work, that.
Yeah, so he's got a tough contest now. I mean, he was seeded Georgian, I think. And then, but like I said, be the first guy. The Finnish guy was the previous one. We just won. So I'm confident. I know it's a challenge, but I'm with Lachlan. I'm backing him, and we're gonna go out, and we're delivering our best no matter what happens. So.
Okay.
And the game plan was, again, I think, was to stick it to the same that we had all day. Really, was to get the two hands on, manage that distance, and then when we felt the time was right, was to then switch and then come underneath or switch and take that risk.
Yeah. See this first exchange and how it plays out.
Yeah, see two hands on.
Yeah, he's managed to get that.
Yeah, just managing the distance and the first attack. Not the best attack, but we've got two hands on, won the first exchange. We're ahead at this point, I think, is in terms of attack rate. And we're managing the gripping.
Next exchange, same plan.
Yeah, not so good now. I mean, we've let him come a little bit deeper. We're letting him in the in that danger zone, but he's managed to pull it back and manage that distance. But we're not in a threatening position. It's too sort of too much in his favour, if you ask me. See, we're taking risks that we we haven't deserved to take that chance there. I think we haven't earned the grip in yet for enough for us to deliver that that attack. Yeah,
found himself in a dangerous situation. You can see the Georgians wanting to hold him up whenever he dropped.
Yeah, I'd rather him build out and start again than attack from too much of a 50-50 situation, you know?
Yeah, which is what the Frenchman was doing in the other fight.
Yeah. So look at the Georgian. I mean, he's high left grip. He's strong on that. He's a good gripper. He's dealing with what Lachlan has to give him at this point, and he's gonna. And that's why, I mean, he's caught the sleeve first. I mean, same side, you're going to go on that left sleeve first, and you're going to come high with the left hand. I mean, that's a good exchange. Well, we could have done better there. I mean, like I said, managing that distance, come on the sleeve first and better left patterns. But
it just shows the importance of kumikata or gripping in the sport.
Yeah, massively. I mean, it's... If you have not got a grip, and you're never going to be able to apply what you want to apply.
Yeah, it's a bit like sort of if you control the grip, even if you don't have the best throwing compared to them, you're giving yourself the best opportunity to win.
Yeah, I mean, if you were like against the French boy, Lachlan wasn't like he wasn't winning so much on attacks, but. He was managing that distance. He had two hands on. He had control of the shoulders. He had he had opportunity to put in attacks when he wanted to because he was managed. But this fight, he's losing on the same side battle. He's letting him close the distance now. So Lachlan's under pressure to put in bad attacks or to get caught like he has done. And I think at this point when Lachlan was fighting this event, and I wasn't going to ask him to deliver the perfect same side pattern because we hadn't done much on it from a technical point of view. Then with a lot of opposite side stuff, but it's just where he was on the program. The fighting left easy. I mean, it's hard enough to find left handers anyway. But at this point, I'm not going to, like I said earlier on, keep it simple and keep it relevant to the athlete of what they can deliver.
Yeah. So there was a bit of a blood stoppage there, wasn't there? So that's a point where you need to try and get the athlete refocused on the fight, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't get a lot of time, and they're always over the far side of the mat. So you're just kind of sitting there, okay, reevaluating the game plan in the chair, getting a feel for the situation, and you have to, for that sort of quick exchange there, when he's come back to the middle of the mat, you can reinforce probably one of them key points that you've got. I mean, first hand on, something simple, and then you're going again. And if you look, Lachlan's keen to get back in the contest.
Yeah, you can see that just in his posture.
Yeah. Which is good. He's losing, so he should be first hand on. I mean, great throw. I mean, you can't argue with that. I mean, he's we're just not there yet, as in terms of winning them contests and big contests. At that point, we wasn't there yet. So, do you know what? Good fight, good day. Now we're coming back off a loss, like we spoke about earlier. It's a chance to take some time, get focused again, get refocused, and then back into the day.
So the next part of the day was actually a bit easier than you might have predicted.
Oh, yeah. So the walkover. I mean, Gamba, I think he hurt his back in an earlier round. So we got gifted a walkover in the repercharge final. I mean, a bit of luck. Sometimes you need a bit of luck on a day. And we was fortunate enough to get it. I mean, it's funny in the tunnel, like no matter how many times people tell you, how many times they say to you, oh, yeah, he's not coming out. I always think and stay somewhat in the zone ready to fight in case you get surprise, I'm here, I'm back. Do you know what I mean? And you've got that fight that you didn't think you was having. So, yeah, there's always a little part of me that stays focused and keeps the athlete sort of focused until we're walking out. And I 100% know they're not there. it seems a funny thing because you know, but you're not 100%, you know?
That's it. I mean, you can't control the actions of anybody else, so it's
something
you have to be prepared for just in case, because the one time that you're not is probably the time that they come out and fight.
Yeah, and so I think Gamba would have been a good contest for him. I think it would have been a good fight to see. I think Lockham would have gone through anyway. I think it would be too strong for him. And I wasn't worried about it. I wasn't concerned about that fight anyway, to be honest. But yeah, it was nice that we get a walkover. I mean, it's always nice to have a bit of luck on your day. And sometimes, like I said, you need that.
So sometimes you do need it, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that puts him into the bronze medal contest. You've got your interval. That you described a little bit generally about what you do in the interval. What was your approach to it on this occasion?
Lachlan was injured in the week. He popped a rib and he was in a bit of pain, and he was managing it throughout the day. And in the Georgian fight, he managed to tweak it somewhat. And it was a conversation around, I mean, if you understand your athlete and know your athlete, you know how to push their buttons and motivate them. And I said, okay, what hurts more at the moment, the fact of losing or your rib? And he obviously replied, by losing. I said, okay, that's not, for now, let's not be a victim of it. We can deal with it after. Let's go get that result that you've earned today. You've had a good day, and let's go finish the day off. And it was it was a discussion that we had, and it was motivating, and I think it brought Lachlan back into a place where, do you know what, let's go and let's finish this day off.
Yeah.
And the rib's gonna hurt, and it's that realization that okay, I picked up a niggle. I had medical check it over that it wasn't serious enough to sort of worry about. And I mean, it's going to hurt. So, okay, if we are okay with that, let's go forward and let's not be a victim of it. And let's go and get something out of this day. Let's go and get something out of this championship.
And at that point in his career, this was the biggest day in his life. It was the biggest contest of his life.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, and come from coming to the center, he was 73 kilos. It won a couple of matches, but not put himself on the scene like I knew he had the ability for. And we spoke about going to 81 kilos and trying it out there, because I didn't, like I spoke early on in the session, that I wanted him to develop as an athlete, and I didn't think that dieting was conducive to him doing that. So yeah, we made a conscious decision to move to 81 kilos. He won the first event he did in that way. He won a medal. He won a junior European medal, European Cup medal, and yeah, put himself where I thought he belonged, like on the rostrum at his age and stage. So yeah, so it's come a long way. It's come a long way at this point, and he's at his first major event, and it's he's looking good. He's looking good that day. I think me personally, I'd had the conversation with him. I've taking myself away. I've gone to grab the coffee, some food, and just sort of, I took a bit of time away and went and put my suit on slowly, and just took time to reflect in my head really about the day and what I thought the final block would bring, and then I come back into the environment. I mean, it was great. I mean, the whole team was there. We had a flag up on the wall behind the seating, and it was just a nice place to be back in that environment, you know, like back with the whole team's there and everyone wants him to win. And like, now I'm ready for the final block at this point now. I'm ready to watch him perform.
And I think the other thing to give a bit of context was that the previous contest to this one was actually Kelly Peterson Pollard becoming your junior European champion.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need much more sort of inspiration to see your teammates win. And I think, like, winning is contagious, ain't it? Like, if you've got everyone winning in your group, you're more inspired to win. And I mean, we had Yaz the day before pick up the bronze medal, so we're having a successful championship win, and we're like, yeah, we're ready to go. I mean, how amazing, we're hyped, and we're in the environment, and we're doing it. Like, everyone seemed to be doing it that day. And even the guys that didn't get on the roster at that point, they'd all had good days. They'd all sort of fought to the best of their ability, give 100%. You can't ask no more than that.
So the team really kind of united behind the athletes that were competing in the final block at this point.
Yeah, I mean, everyone was there. Everyone was shouting and screaming, and it was nice, you know, like that team feel, that team ethic that we want to embed in the system and especially in the junior system.
I think that gives a really good picture of how this day was going at that point, and the way that the EDS squad operates as a team. So it's great to hear that kind of insight. This kind of insight now, we can actually have a bit of a visual of you in the tunnel with Lachlan as he walks out for this bronze medal fight. Do you want to just talk us through this as you approach the contest area for the fight?
So I mean, like I said earlier, like I'm just as nervous as him, but I'm calm on the surface. I'm reinforcing to him a message of the game plan again. Like I don't have my bottle to cause a trigger now, but I know that we're in the moment. We're in that moment, and I'm like, I think I said to him, "Are you ready?" And he's yeah, I'm ready. And then yeah, that was the day. And he's like I said to you, he was in a different place than I've seen him through certain events. Than he was. He was more game than I've seen him. He was in that zone, that's for sure.
Yeah. You can see even the pace that he's approaching the mat with. He's excited.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I think it's him stepping up stepping up to that level, and he wants that medal. There was no way he was not getting that medal that day, you know?
Yeah. So plan going into this contest, same as before or slightly different?
Yeah, same as before in terms of first and on. I spoke to him a lot more about taking a risk, opening up, and about how in the most successful people in on major events and big days, big competition days, are the ones that have a go, that take that risk and open up. And it was about controlling that distance, managing the contest, but when the opportunity is right, take that calculated risk and take the opportunity to put the guy away. And
back in your ability, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and just having that confidence in yourself to deliver. I mean, if you're winning the grips and you're in a good position, you have a go. That's the fun bit, isn't it? That's the enjoyment of judo, isn't it? To find out whether you can.
Yeah, you don't want to be walking off the mat from any contest, really, but particularly a medal contest, not feeling like you've given it your all.
Yeah, exactly. You wanna walk off that mat knowing that you've give 100% of you, and because if you don't do it, you'll sit there and you'll eat yourself away about how you could have delivered more. And I think Lachlan was having that day where he was leaving everything out there on the mat and on that day for sure, definitely. This way, I think you've obviously got the pressure of being a final block. It's a bronze contest. If you lose, that's it's nothing for you. But fifth, and I think he got a little fixated in just sort of one attack, one throw that he's very confident in using, and that's great. But like I say, I'm trying to reinforce him taking that risk, having a go, putting himself out there, you know.
So the first minute and a half, he's been probably leading the contest with Ruma attacks, but as you say, not maybe taking the risks that you're wanting them to take at this point. So if we skip through to the final minute.
Yeah, he's managing the distance okay. He's not opened up as much as I would like to him of. I mean, he should have been very confident at that point. He's had a good day. He's like I said, he's so strong. And yeah, you'd want him to it was the start point was the double lapel, the double grip was the start point to manage the distance, and then we could build close and create threatening opportunities once that happened. And
So just wondering going into the last minute.
Yeah.
What's the feeling at the moment?
Same game plan. I mean, like the same start of the game plan was to sort of manage that distance and keep that thingy, and I wanted him to come closer, and obviously get in a better position to put them attacks in like he's doing now. But yeah, manage the distance first, and then open up.
Yeah. So it's another left fight that was one he struggled with earlier against the Georgian.
Yeah, he's this fight. I think he had he's a lot stronger than this guy, and stronger in terms of like his gripping and stuff like that. So the guy wasn't threatening. He didn't do many attacks. I don't think he done sort of one real big attack. I think that was sort of threatening. And anything other than that, Lockhart had the distance managed, but he just didn't pressure enough, didn't climb enough to get the pressured reaction from the guy that we wanted early on. Do you know what I mean? I think he could have done this early on.
You can see that the Slovakian boys, he's not happy with those grips being on. He's trying to snap them off.
No, yeah, it manages. I think that there was the guy's sort of biggest attack of the day. Lachlan didn't need to put that attack in there. I don't think he was pressured enough at that point. Now into golden score. He's an attack down, I think, in this exchange. He needs to sort of mix it up a bit. And this is what I'm shouting to him now. Even in this, I mean, I don't want him to lose on Shilo's. I want him to lose because he's had a go, and it was all about taking a risk and staying in. And this is what he's done. Yeah, he took a risk. He come across the side. He come a different gripping pattern than he'd been repeating throughout the fight. When he took the risk, when he finally got the courage to take the risk, he scored. And that's what I'm saying. It's the people that take that calculated risk that have the best days and have the most sort of success during them days.
You can see what it means to him when he points to the flag on his chest there, how proud he is to win that medal for Great Britain.
Oh, of course, yeah. And I mean, Collier is proud to sit in there in the chair and watch this guy come from like a 73 kid into the centre, into this beast that's 81 kilos and just claimed a junior European bronze medal. I mean, did he see the throw? He's locked in. He took that risk that he needed to take, and he got success from it. And that's, you can't ask for more than that. What a day he had! I mean, what a star point for this guy's career to take that second year junior taking a junior European bronze medal.
Decent face plant as well coming up here, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think I remember you saying at the time he thought he felt like Lippertiliani when he threw with that, but then he watched the replay and thought otherwise.
Lippertiliani was calling him. I think when you play it back, I don't think it looks anything like Lippertiliani there, but you know what? You can't argue with it. I mean, the last 81 European medal we had was Thomas Cousins, I think, back many years ago now. But yeah, so how great is that to be on a rostrum junior European championships?
Yeah, I mean, that's nearly 20 years that's been since anybody medaled at that weight category in junior European championships. So it's some achievement really in itself. And it's been great to see how that day played out from both yours and from his perspective, really.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a great day for me and a great day for Lachlan. Obviously, I mean, he's a junior European medalist, and how amazing!
Yeah, and we can only hope that that's the launching pad that takes him on to even greater things.
Yeah, and I think it will. He's got the right determination, right work ethic to push on. And he's in the best environment for him to do so.
He's in a beast of an athlete as well. He's going to be able to compete physically with just about anybody.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the points of why he is so successful, that he's spent the time literally having a super strength in an area that you need to be physically able. So, yeah, and he definitely is physically able to apply the judo he wants to do. going back to the key points, I mean, on the day it was kept simple. It was a double lapel tactic to manage distance, and then we could open up from there. So, and it was definitely in line with what he can apply. The language was kept simple throughout the day. It was reinforced with positive messaging all the time. First and on, which is the opposite of a negative action. So yeah, keep reinforcing that. First and on, go from there, and then no more than three key points of information. Probably less than the three key points in that day. Kept it really sort of simple, and it got us through the day. It is a working example of me using these sort of skills throughout the day.
Yeah, it's been a great experience to listen to how this was from your perspective and how it felt. And I hope you don't feel as exhausted at this point as you did at the end of that day.
Do you know what? Every time I watch the fights, I'm back in the chair again. But no, it's been great to go over it. I mean, I haven't gone over it like that for a long time now, and it's what a great experience for me, and yeah, a great experience for him. And it's obviously great talking about it and trying to express and get the sort of feelings over that I was having that day and the journey I went on as well. So yeah, thank you for the coffee, and I hope to chat again soon.
Thank you, Dan. And we'll be back again with more insights from elite performance coaches from the GB program in the future. Thanks very much.